Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're sitting here after the first day of the draft doing a recap. Joining me for that is Jordan Coe. Jordan, how are you doing?
Good, Ken. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Sound is okay. We had some problems on the stream with my sound not being good, but I think we got them resolved. It was at the worst time, too. It was right after the Wiggins pick, but all of a sudden I'm breaking up here. So,
no, you're clear. I'm good.
All right. So I kind of would like to handle this in a different way as the Ravens, in search of, I think, two or three positions in particular, those being left tackle, cornerback, and wide receiver, saw this first round kind of roll out. And I guess, you know, I'd ask you, Jordan, as well, the wide receiver, did you feel like some of their need for that or some of their urgency at that position was alleviated by the extension of Rashad Bateman?
I mean, yes and no. I think it's a question of, it's always interesting when you think of like value and how the Ravens approach value and this whole best player available concept, which is kind of how the Ravens approach it, but it's a little bit of a misnomer, right? Like, they're looking at guys that are going to bring value in spots that like they can contribute. The Ravens have never really kind of pulled a, you know, Aaron Rodgers, for example, right? Or Jordan Love, where they like basically taking a guy that they know is going to be waiting in the wings. You know, if they took a left tackle this year, it was going to have to be a guy that was going to play right tackle or play guard before they got him out to left tackle. And I'm sure that was part of their consideration. So as that plays out in terms of wide receiver, to me, it's like, okay, if Thomas slips to them at 30, I think it's a no-brainer. They're going to take him, right? Mm-hmm. I think Worthy probably wasn't a fit for what they were looking for. So, again, it's like one of those instances where if it's the right guy, they're going to go for it. And I think the Ravens wouldn't have hesitated to take a wide receiver. But I think the Ravens really like Nate Wiggins. You know, for whatever, you know, whatever you might, you or, I don't mean you specifically, but anybody thought of Nate Wiggins and what they put on tape and what they thought his projection was going to be, I think the Ravens, that pick came in quick. You know, we've already heard DaCosta come out and say they had 8 different trade offers that were on the table for them at that pick. I think that it was the case that they didn't think Wiggins was going to be there when they picked. And since he was, it was a run up, not a run up, but they were going to take him unless they were overwhelmed by something else.
I am going to repeat, and I know some people from the draft show, if you've listened to this and sat through 5 hours, you heard already some of what I said about the corners in particular. But Nate Wiggins was number one corner on my entire board. The most gifted athletically, probably of all the corners. He's the fastest at 4.28. Good jumps. 6'1", 173 is a little slender for the position, but he's a pure cover guy. But here's the good thing. Sometimes you get those metrics and they just don't turn into good metrics. Xavier Worthy being a great example of a guy who does not have great receiving metrics. Adonai Mitchell does not have great receiving metrics to go with outstanding size and athleticism. In Wiggins' case, his coverage metrics are an absolute confirmation of those athleticism. So 4.3 yards per target in his senior year. He's targeted kind of a lot, once every 6.8 snaps, which was 87th among corners. There are 190 corners in the group that had a minimum number of snaps that I looked at. But the 4.3 yards per target was fantastic. He had 2 interceptions and 1 touchdown. That's the kind of relationship you love to have at corner. And a 44.4 opposition passer rating, which was the 10th best in the entire group of 190 cornerbacks. So very excited to have a player that corroborates those two things. I mentioned Tez Walker beat him for a 43-yard play. That's one of the best receivers in the draft, folks. One of the top 12 or so in the North Carolina win. The second longest play he gave up, only 18 yards. Okay. Penalized just one time the entire season. So that's a cornerback that doesn't have to get jiggy with it, doesn't have to get grabby with it when he gets beaten at the top of the stem. And obviously it wasn't happening that much. He also probably really trusts his makeup speed given where he is. The last line I have in about
definitely
this, I
know his
this
makeup is a speed. I was just going to say he definitely makes up for a lot of some of the mistakes that, you know, I think there were some people that felt like his hip flip and transitions weren't as good as you might want to see from a shutdown type corner, but his speed had on tape more than made up for it.
The last bullet I have in this is it's a fantasy to think the Ravens will have a shot at him at number 30. I honestly thought he would go in the top 15. I thought he'd be the first corner taken. I know there is a medical issue that some people are concerned about. I seriously hope the Ravens have got themselves in a good position, and this is not another Breshad Perriman situation where they have a guy who is, you know, well, Breshad did not have great college receiving statistics. He had great speed and great athleticism, but Wiggins has two of the three covered. Now he just needs to make sure he can stay on the field, and I think he's going to be a hell of a player. Now, as great as that was, there's a fair amount of frustration in terms of the Ravens and the offensive tackle story that is probably worth like going through the draft as it played out to talk about how that frustration kind of came to fruition for this team. But give me any other high-level thoughts you have first before we do that.
Yeah, you know, this draft was interesting in that even the guys that the Ravens just barely missed on right before their pick weren't, I don't think, total home runs in the sense that, and I hate it when people use analogies of other sports, they weren't guys that I think the Ravens, even if they had excess capital to trade up for, would have even been willing to trade up for anyway, right? So, yeah, maybe if these guys fall to us at 30, we can be happy with them, but they weren't going to be guys that they were necessarily going to move up for. In a world where they had an abundance of capital, the way they've talked about Wiggins seems like he's the kind of guy that they actually would have done that for. So like you look at the rest of kind of what happened there, it certainly would have been nice if the Ravens were in like that 22 range. There were some players that fell into like that 15 to 20 range that I think really had some nice solid value in terms of where it could have been returned to the Ravens. Beyond that, I would like to have a tackle, and I don't quite understand where the Ravens came down with Morgan Moses, what they were doing with that. I think there's some irony in that the Jets traded for Moses and took a tackle. So that does tell you something about why the Ravens potentially traded him and, you know, might have been thinking about what that looked like. And maybe the Jets are worried about something else that's there too. But this is, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not going to get too frustrated when you got a team that's picking 30th, that is in the position the Ravens were in at the end of the last year. They don't have a lot of holes. It would have been nice to get an offensive lineman, but there's still a lot of time left in this offseason to improve this team. There's a long way to go, a lot of draft left to be had, 4 comp picks coming in next year. I mean, it's just in the narrow moment of the last 2 hours, yes, I'm frustrated. In the broader picture of the last 6 months, plus the next 18 months, I'm not frustrated at all.
Well, I hope the Ravens can find the answer, because 53% of the value in this draft was in that first pick. So you really have to hit on your first round pick. That's what it comes down to year after year. I think the Ravens got exceptional value here. In fact, if I had to repeg this, I'd say Wiggins is a top 15 guy. If you assume he's the 15th best player in this draft. And let me see, I had a draft tech board up here just a minute ago, but that would be worth 1,050, or 14 would be worth 11. Let's call it 1,050 if he's the 15th best player. And they got him for 620. That's a 430 JJ point surplus they got out of that pick. That's roughly equivalent to the 47th pick in the entire draft that they got in incremental value for taking Wiggins, in my estimation. So admittedly, the other things factor into that, but this was 75% of a Hamilton in terms of a slam dunk pick relative to value they had available to them there. So I from that perspective, at least, I think it's a very good pick. From the not having the tackle situation fixed, however, it's a very big loss, and the Ravens are going to end up giving a lot back, a lot of that 430 back, I'm afraid, to fix their left tackle problem in terms of premiums they'll have to pay over the course of the next 2 years. Whether they do it tomorrow to move up for Suamatia, Paul, or Amagaji, whether they, you know, whiff on somebody like that, even if they draft him at 62, you know, they're in a position where they could lose a lot of value back for not getting their left tackle.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that. And it's something to worry about. I think also the context of that is Lamar cures some of, you know, the offensive line struggles to begin with. You know, how much Stanley has not looked great, has Lamar made him look even better over the last couple of years when he has been playing than he even was? You know, we've seen some decent Ravens wins and some decent Ravens offensive output with some pretty bad offensive linemen. Andrew Villanueva, please raise your hand. You know, so given that context, yeah, I mean, I agree with you, but again, I don't know that it's one of those. It doesn't make me concerned about the future of this Ravens team that they haven't locked this up and that it is, and it's open-ended question right now.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. I kind of want to walk through this draft in terms of where I think the left tackle run started in an unexpected way that it kind of got us. And let's start with the top three picks, all quarterbacks. The first little bit of drama was the New England Patriots not trading out at number three. So we expected Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels to go 1-2. Then we saw Drake May go number three to New England, them hold on to that pick. There was a lot of thought that they would trade it, try and pick up additional value, get back to one of the other quarterbacks 10 picks later, whatever it might have been. They didn't. They hold on to him. And actually how the board fell out probably actually might have lost out on a quarterback entirely if they had traded back.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that in their mind, it was – Minnesota trading the entire hall of picks probably in the first to them for that pick. Minnesota sounded like they weren't willing to do that, which turned out to be the prudent thing to do for them. I think they got their guy. And so, I mean, look, you know, for the Patriots, May is not the end of the world. I did the quarterback podcast with you. We talked about it. He's young. Mm-hmm. He's got smaller hands, but he's young. He's got upside. They've got time. They've got the ability to add some playmakers. They've got cap space this year and in upcoming years to work with too. So from a development perspective, I think, they were in the same kind of position the Ravens were in, where I think if somebody offered like a second next year and, you know, the second this year for the 30th pick, the Ravens would have taken that and they would have dealt it even with Wiggins on the board, right? They needed to be overwhelmed to make a trade like that. I think the Patriots were in the same kind of situation where they were setting it up. They were like, and they'd said this all along, we're good with May if he's there or Daniels, whoever we're going to get, we're going to be happy with it. But if someone wants to overpay for him, we'll be happy to let you. And that's the way it played out.
Number four, Arizona gets Marvin Harrison. No surprise there. He's the first receiver off the board, so I don't think we need to talk about too much there. And I think Arizona was in a position where if they trade that pick, they probably don't get back to a good receiver either, or they might not because they might have had to trade down too far. Then here's where the dominoes started to fall. Number five, the Chargers were a potential landing spot for Malik Nabers. They were a potential trade partner for somebody looking for J.J. McCarthy. Lots of things could have happened to that pick. In my mind, my heart just sank as soon as I heard Joe Halt's name mentioned at that spot, because I knew this is a significant depletion to the offensive tackle pool, which is going to affect the Ravens all the way down at 30.
But you knew that Greg Roman and Jim Harbaugh were going to take an offensive lineman. I mean, for anybody that was surprised by that. And again, I agree with you. I think they should have taken Nabers. You've got a guy like Herbert and an arm like his. You got you traded Keenan, like the one guy he was throwing to in Keenan Allen, you have now gotten rid of. How do you not take somebody as good as Nabers? All of those things I agree with in concept. Again, Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman. I mean, that we just nobody should have been surprised that that's ended up being the direction that they went in.
Well, it certainly was disruptive. And I'm thinking at that point, we're in a 1 point hole, kind of a one tackle hole of where we are. So I was terming it as we're at minus one right now. Nabers was taken number six by the Giants. So, you know, at this point, all the top wide receivers, everybody. Incredible 14 straight offensive players taken to start this draft. The big next domino to fall, though, the Tennessee Titans was supposed to be a landing spot for Joe Alt. There was a fear that they would take an offensive tackle. I think that fear got a little bit worse that they went ahead and took J.C. Latham, who I know had been rising on a lot of boards, but I think still was thought of to be kind of a reach at number seven, with Fashanu, probably a better pass blocker, still at that point. Latham has played exclusively on the right side, by the way, at Alabama. It was a little bit of a surprising pick. And while I thought there's a pretty good chance they would take a tackle at that spot, that still was kind of a minus two at that point, because Tennessee was a team who didn't absolutely have to take a tackle.
Yeah, they didn't have to take a tackle. And they were in an interesting place. I mean, they've got their quarterback, right? So in that sense, that was interesting. And, you know, they've got some decent playmakers, obviously, at running back. You know, even moving on from Henry, they're well off there. But another instance in another spot where you could have seen them take a wide receiver just really tells you it was real virtue signaling at that point that everybody across the board really valued this tackle class, that more so even with a highly regarded receiver class, as it were, for kind of the top end of this group. Just it told us that, you know, even in the world of like the minus one from the Chargers pick, this told us there were going to be runs. People were going to value offensive linemen, even if they weren't the perfect fits in the perfect situations, that it was going to be tough. I think the Ravens knew from that point forward it was going to be pretty tough. And if they wanted a specific guy, they were going to have to pay heartily probably to move up to get him.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit in terms of how much they would have had to pay, but it's interesting. So Michael Penix goes off the board at number 8 to the Falcons. Mild surprise there. Really started a run on quarterbacks, and they certainly could have traded back and gotten him, I think. I don't know how far they could have traded back, but I think they probably saw a possibility of the Vikings trading up, which they did, into that 10 spot, or that the Jets would trade that pick to somebody who'd want a quarterback. And then Denver was sitting at 12, looking like they were going to draft a quarterback, and they did, in fact, draft the last available quarterback, last available first-round talent at that spot. You and I did a quarterback show, and I think, you know, one of the things we said is it's going to be great for the Ravens if they can get 6 quarterbacks off the board in the top 29, and no one took 12 picks.
and Penix went before McCarthy, who I thought I liked his upside. I disagree with you in the sense that this was not a mild surprise. The Falcons taking a quarterback after obligating $180 million to Kirk Cousins. I think $70 million of that was guaranteed, maybe more than that. They're on the hook with Cousins for 2 more years, no matter what. There's $65 million pending for Atlanta to cut Cousins. I not a mild surprise to me. Surprise to me.
Penix will be a year 3 starter, so he'll have a 2-year internship that he serves under Cousins. And by the way, it doesn't have to be a full 2 years. The first year, Cousins is certainly going to play. In the second year, you've already got a sunk cost. So whenever Penix is ready, you slip him in for Cousins. And the third and fourth years of Cousins deals are not guaranteed. So they can save, I think it's $32.5 million the first year plus whatever they save in the fourth year. But they have a $32.5 million cap savings from cutting Cousins in 2026. So it really comes down to, do they really believe Cousins is going to be able to play in 2025? And they'd be mixed on it. A pick of Penix means he has to wait 1 year plus to get his starting opportunity. As soon as the team starts to go south in 2025, you can make that switch like that in terms of putting Penix in. You could probably do it in 24.
So this is how I think of it, Ken. In what world would, if it was just a straight up trade, and we assume that Cousins was getting a little bit more money to match up to Lamar's money, Cousins, Penix, and Bijan Robinson for Lamar Jackson would be an outlandish concept, that nobody would trade Lamar Jackson for those three guys. And that is in and of itself what Atlanta said that they weren't willing to give up for Lamar Jackson. So just thinking of the deficit value between what Lamar brings to the Ravens versus what those three guys bring to the Falcons, mind-blowing to me that they would spend all that money on Cousins. Also, the other thing, Penix is, and we talked about this on the podcast, is not young. So let's say he does go through a full 2-year internship. He will be 26 and a half
years old. Yeah.
He hits the field. Yeah.
It's a great point. And it was one of the really surprising moments of this draft, certainly. And I think you make a great point there about the 3-for-1 exchange in terms of value there. But we'll continue on. So Roma Dunze goes at number 9 to the Bears. No surprise at all. You know, obviously value out to be had there. Number 10, I've been pimping David Buschelman, who made a great trade idea that Isaiah Likely and 30 in exchange for number 10 to the Jets. The Jets do end up trading the pick. They didn't feel the need to take Brock Bowers, so who knows if that could have been available. And the Vikings, of course, go out and pick their guy, J.J. McCarthy, who will be playing how soon? Who's he behind now at Minnesota for this year?
He's behind nobody, right?
Is there Jacoby Brissett or somebody like that?
It's not Jacoby Brissett, but it's something like that. It's nobody worth, if he's ready, and I think he's actually a good fit for their system there. Could be starting sooner rather than later.
Okay. Older player, Darnold. So you better start.
It's Sam Darnold.
Oh no. How are they going to get Sam Darnold off the field? Come on, be realistic about this. They should be thinking about extending Sam Darnold. That's funny. Then we kind of got back on track with the tackles, but this is the pick that killed the Ravens. The New York Jets, of course, in theory, they have all the tackles they could possibly need. But they go out and they take Olufashano at number 11, my second ranked left tackle. Their guy would have had ahead of Latham. And the Ravens are, even if you consider the other picks of quarterbacks and whatnot, I think they maintained a full minus 2 at this point.
Yeah, I think this one was the stinger. And even you throw the Morgan Moses trade on as like the cherry on top of the sundae there as the kind of what is just going to show you where the value and where teams thought the value was going to be. I mean, Joe Douglas and a kind of Ravens-centric historical team building concept, it's not a surprise to see them go offensive line here, you know, overall. But definitely this was the death knell of – made it really unlikely when we got to this point that we were going to see the Ravens get a tackle, I thought, or at least one that I liked, because I was not as big of a fan of Guyton, who went right before they picked, than I think others were.
Okay. Including me. So that, that is what it is. So the Broncos pick Bo Nix at number 12. Again, that's very good news. The Raiders go ahead and take Brock Bowers. I would say that's good news just because you want Brock Bowers off the board before 29. No, I don't think there's any danger that was going to happen. But you also lose the possibility of the Raiders making one of their classic wild card picks. So you kind of lost 2/10 of a pick back that way. So, you know, you're just certain teams that are just so screwy that just don't give a damn. It would have been nice to see them make a wild card pick there.
It was interesting that we just really didn't see any of those wild card picks. I think that there's probably one pick in the first round that I would circle as a team being super frustrated as to who was selected or before the Ravens picked. I think it got a little wild there after the Ravens pick. Uh-huh. But before the Ravens pick, there was only one guy, and I'll mention it when we get there, that I would have circled and said this one was a surprise, or I would have been disappointed as the team. So for sure that we, you know, not having any of those wild card picks happening for any team here also worked against the Ravens. You know, you have like that kind of cumulative .08 addition to the negative opportunity of getting a tackle by there just not being somebody crazy selected at some point here.
Yeah. Let's move on to number 14. Taliaferro Fuaga signed. Now, Fuaga was a right tackle, but again, drains more of that tackle pool. We're like as scarce on tackles as we are on rare earth metals at this point in the draft. And you just really don't have a lot left in terms of things. Fuaga, he's a can of whoop ass. I would have been okay getting him, but he does not truly have left tackle characteristics. It's just more about what the absence of him does to the attractiveness of players like Mims and Latham, Latham had already been gone, but Mims in particular, who'd already played on the right side, and how other teams would view them. So anyway, I knew Fuaga was going to go fairly high. I wasn't upset about it in general, but the fact that he's depleting the offensive tackle pool, a little bit of a bummer.
And a guy that at this spot, the Saints could have definitely gone wide receiver. I thought Brian Thomas might have been a player that could have been in play at that point. And if we would have seen Brian Thomas come off the board there, things might have shaken out a little bit differently overall. The Saints were a bit of a wild card in terms of, I think they could have gone in a lot of different directions. And I think I agree with you. The Fuago's kind of a interesting pick for them because they had a lot of other needs. I guess they think that that's going to tighten up the line for them and Derek Carr, and they're going to be more competitive than I think that you and I think they might be next year.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go. The Indianapolis Colts then picked Leatu Latu. If you can get by the medicals, he is an incredibly polished pass rusher, and he's the first off the board and the first, in fact, defensive player taken in the entire draft. I think a lot of people surprised by the fact we went before Dallas Turner. I had him as third on my board among the edge players, largely because of the medical. He would have been second, even though without the neck thing, which I didn't know this the extent of it before. I think just extraordinarily polished player, the best hand placement probably to come out of the draft at that position in many years. You bring him in to, he's the one guy Chuck Smith probably can't teach anything to, or he can teach Chuck Smith a few things. Just extraordinary hand placement player.
Yeah, it was interesting that Turner fell past this spot. And there was a little intrigue at this point about, edge being a spot for the Ravens of need, and this being a draft with not a lot of edge talent, even as you kind of went cascaded farther down the draft, of whether or not the Ravens were thinking about if Turner started to fall even farther, whether or not there was consideration for a move up there as well.
All right. Well, Byron Murphy, who one of the really highly thought of defensive linemen, actually a little bit of a surprise that he got as far as 16, but McDonald gets a very nice building block on the defensive line there that can help him. Dallas Turner finally goes at 17 to the Vikings. Again, these picks don't hurt the Ravens in their quest for a tackle, a cornerback, or wide receiver, so we are happy with these. Then the Bengals really stick it in the Ravens' rear end by getting Amarius Mims as at number 18.
These AFC North teams did us dirty this year. Yep. And this was the start of it. And teams might make different things out of Mims and kind of, obviously limited profile in terms of what you saw from him in actual gameplay from a college perspective. But I think that was one of the instances where you felt like the Ravens were going to have a chance of getting him because of some of those question marks. Again, just more virtue signaling here that tackle was going to be overvalued. Maybe there is a chance I thought this was a little early for Mims. Like, obviously this is a big upside reward potential for mm-hmm. the Bengals to be able to get a guy like him, but also really big bust potential for them. Higgins is probably gone long-term. If he can't stay healthy or, can't be a left tackle, that's a interesting proposition for an investment of a pick in that range for Cincinnati when, in theory, they should bounce back now that Burrow's getting healthy again.
Do they have one more year of Orlando Brown left on his contract? Or they have how long do they have him for? He might have even signed
I think maybe two. Deal, right? Yeah.
Okay. I'm looking at it right now, so we'll just take a look. But I thought last year he signed through 26, so he's there for three years. Now, admittedly, they may not have him for all those years, but the cap numbers are pretty flat as they stand right now. So you haven't really done a lot of restructuring, I should say, but 16.4, 15.3, 22.0 for the next 3 years. Actually kind of sounds pretty reasonable for Brown, who didn't have his best year last year, but is still a pretty good tackle. And this really looks to me like the Bengals will be able to keep Mims on the right side to do this if they want to. I mean, they may decide Mims is their better left tackle. They'll go with him, but anyway, they could do that.
Yeah. I think Brown has an interesting, given his kind of history and size and things, that a risk of potential drop off as well. So, it wasn't surprising to see the Bengals make a decision to tackle here. Not a ton of other holes. I mean, maybe with Hendrickson and what was going on with them, this would have been one of the spots where you could have seen them go edge and take Verse, who was still on the board. So a little surprised they didn't do that, but if they're going to play hardball with Hendrickson and keep him around anyway, then there's not really a lot of value there for them either.
All right, we go to number 19, the Rams, Jared Verse. So the last of the three big edge rushers comes off the board, the last of the three first round edge rushers. Now, there were a couple guys more taken who I think, a lot of people would have made second round players, but they certainly there weren't enough first round players. That was a very chalky first round for most of this first round. So if you had a board of 20 or 22 players, you didn't necessarily get your guy at number 30. The Ravens happened to get one in Wiggins. Not everybody did. So we'll go through that a little later. And then number 20 comes up and the Steelers get Troy Fatano, another player who Gordon McGinnis had advocating trading every pick in the Ravens draft. Not advocated, really. He's just making fun, but he showed a mock draft.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Where they traded every pick to get up to number 17 to take Fatano.
Yeah. I mean, he was probably, you know, in the straight tackle world, he probably was the last guy that I really liked there. I think like Barton was also interesting and a guy that probably can stick it right tackle long term. But you know, this one stung again to see back to back AFC North picks ahead of the Ravens going tackle. Just sucked.
Yeah, Fatano looks like a guard, but is really has the length to play tackle, but he is a gourd like shape to play guard as well. So he's going to be a hell of a lineman, I'm afraid. And this really, I mean, the Steelers, they haven't had a particularly good set of linemen for a long time. And this is a great building block for them, I'm afraid. So there was an injury flag that came out late with him. And that I think has something to do with him dropping as far as 20, because most of the mocks I saw over the course of the last month had him significantly higher than 20. Okay, move on. Chop Robinson goes number 21, one of the big reaches of the first round. I thought he's a guy early second round, late first round, okay, maybe. But for him to go all the way up to 21 just seemed like a pretty significant reach on the edge.
I was super surprised. And this one, you know, depending on how you view Wiggins to the Ravens, surprised me that they didn't go corner. Now, obviously, they hurt all their outside linebackers at the end of the last year. And it's particularly with Chubb getting hurt in the Ravens game in particular, obviously they needed some depth there, you know, at edge, but this seemed like a spot where they could have moved back. Then that's what they wanted to do. They were in one of those prime, I mentioned earlier, there was kind of this prime spot there in kind of like the 17 to 22 range where it felt like there was some real value to extract, you know, versus a guy I mentioned earlier, value to extract out of those picks in particular. And it seems like the Dolphins just, pun intended, chopped it up.
Yeah. Great point. That if they had dropped to 30, for example, there, they didn't even have to extract full JJ value to make it an economical decision for them. Now they would have given away a tackle to the Ravens. I don't really believe teams care about making other teams in the conference better. Okay, if I'm using a 10-point scale, making a team in the division better is a 10 in terms of – is a negative 10, we'll call it. Making a team in the conference better is about a negative 3, and making a team in the NFC better is a negative 1, or maybe even a plus 1, because you're taking the talent and putting it on the other side. But I just don't think – if they're in the conference but not in the division, I don't think teams are too worried about that.
Yeah, and this is also just in the world of what were some of these teams thinking tonight. Like, this seemed like it was the kind of spot that Buffalo or even Kansas City might have wanted to move up to take Thomas instead of Worthy, who I think is significantly, considering how close they were drafted together, I think Thomas is just significantly better overall player. And so, you know, it just felt like And especially with Keon Mitchell coming off the board, right? I thought that was who the Dolphins were going to pick. I was really surprised when they didn't, especially with Xavier Howard being gone there. Just felt like they whiffed on a value opportunity there.
Yeah, completely agree. I'm not as high on Quinyon Mitchell, who was the next pick for the Eagles, as other people. I think the context really concerns me about Quinyon. And the Kadar Holman comp, I've mentioned it several times on the show, so I'm not going to go into it again. Look at who Kadar Holman was exactly 5 years ago, and look what Kadar Holman's been since this time. He is a near perfect comp for Quinyon Mitchell. 4.33 speed, 4.39 speed, both played cornerback, both were very highly touted. He was drafted, and he's now playing his 10th stint for his 8th team with the Ravens this summer. So I think context is very important, and I'm really happy that he's somebody else's problem. To me, he's a very high risk proposition. Might work out. If he works out, he's probably going to be just fine. I wouldn't have done it. All right, move on. Brian Thomas, great pick at number 23. Fantastic value for the Jaguars. I would have loved him at 30.
And he's on like a trade back too.
Got him on a trade back too. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Lions then get Terrion Arnold at number 24. An interesting pick because there's four other corners sitting out there after Quinyon, and they picked Arnold. They did not pick Kool-Aid, which was maybe a little surprising, playing in the same defensive backfield, but also they did not take Wiggins. And I guess I understand that more with the medical concerns. And then they didn't also take Cooper DeJean, who remains out there at the start of day two, a guy who has tremendous versatility, and that could fit a lot of teams, I would think.
Yeah, and it felt like the Lions needed a boundary corner as much as anybody needed a boundary corner. So Arnold, a guy that seems like he might be playing inside a little bit more than outside, I thought it was a little surprising. This was also, they also traded up to make this pick too. But again, Arnold coming with a decent enough pedigree. I mean, it wasn't a stunner. There were certainly people that had him ahead of Wiggins in terms of where they were evaluating things. So this wasn't a shocker overall.
Yeah, but you want a team that really won the first round. Look at the Dallas Cowboys trading down from 24 to 29 and still getting their guy who was available at 24. Yeah. That's an incredible move. And I thought there is no way in hell at 24 and 25 with Dallas Green and Green Bay picking that Tyler Guyton is going to make it through those two picks. And sure enough, Dallas trades the pick, cornerback taken. Green Bay takes Jordan Morgan, which is the biggest sigh of relief of the entire night. Did not want him.
That I was surprised that was taken. That would be the one pick that, and it's funny, I think I was watching ESPN. I was bouncing back and forth between NFL Network and ESPN in that moment. And they had the camera on like a Green Bay fan right before they announced the pick. And like the devastation on his face when they announced the pick was, it would have been our faces if it was the Ravens doing the exact same thing. So funny, funny reaction in that sense. Just a surprise again with, like you said, with Barton still on the board to take Jordan Morgan. Love his name, but big surprise.
Yeah, it really was a big surprise. And Morgan is a lot of people think that I just don't like Morgan for arm length and a guy who's under 33 inches at left tackle. I do not like him. And that's enough of a reason probably not to draft him. But it's much worse with Jordan Morgan. Jordan Morgan does not have an anchor. And that combination of no length, no anchor is especially dangerous. It is especially dangerous. Joe Alt has an untested anchor. He's a long, big, tall drink of water. He'll add weight. He'll be fine when he gets down to it. But he's going to really rely on his punch, as will a lot of the other guys who are vertically constituted athletes, that don't have a bunch of sand in the pants. Fatano and Fuaga don't have to worry about that. They're built like guards, but the other guys, they need to worry about it. It's a real question mark. Anyway, Jordan Morgan, kind of like Ronnie Stanley has been since about 2019 in terms of giving ground to mirror, good mirror, bad ability to defend against the bull rush. And I think that's going to be a problem for him at the NFL level.
I think you and a lot of other people thought that. You know, it's just a lot of other people felt that way. It's very surprising and very interesting to see. I mean, the Packers obviously think he can be their left tackle, and with Bakhtiari gone, you know, something for them to think about. But I think we were all surprised here and happy and relieved. This is a plus one in the column of for the Ravens, and almost an opportunity where there was like a moment there, and you probably shared the same sentiment right when that pick happened. And okay, maybe the Ravens are going to get a tackle, and it is going to be a guy that they really like when they get him there.
Yeah. So I think we were in that point. Of course, I was thinking immediately, how do they trade up to 26? How do they trade up to 27 when they're in the clock? Because you know other teams are looking to do that. And we kind of had a repeat, as it turned out, of the 2007 draft, but we're going to get to that. It's been a long time. The pain is still there. I still remember my feeling when the 49ers jumped the Ravens at 29 to get Joe Staley away from them. But anyway, say one last thing about this. The Packers have a good history with getting value at guys off position on the offensive line. So they could make Morgan a guard, or he could end up sticking at left tackle and being like Zach Tom, who everybody predicted would move inside. Everybody thought Zach Tom was a center, probably. I loved him for exactly that reason. I thought he would be a great value center instead of Linderbaum, say, because he could have had him in the fourth or fifth round. I think he actually got drafted in the fifth round. Would have been terrific value to go that way instead, I thought. But then he ends up playing a tackle, and it's like you're getting shot again, and it's Michael Onwenu all over again in terms of a guy who ends up being much more positionally versatile than you even expected. So it could be Morgan ends up just being either a good guard, a guy who can play right tackle, a guy who adjusts to playing left tackle under very good coaching in Green Bay. And we got to always remember, Green Bay, Pittsburgh, and Baltimore have the three best front offices in the game with regard to the draft, and they have for decades. So those three teams, ever since the Ravens came into the league, by far dominate any comparison of how well teams have drafted, regardless of how you slice it. So before we bang on the Packers for that Jordan Morgan trade too hard, the Packers probably have a plan, and given that it's the Packers, it will probably work out. Still happy.
Well, you know, and you mentioned this earlier, the Ravens could not afford to ultimately miss on whatever this pick ended up being. So I think that's the context of which we're happy about this, which is that there's not, you know, like if it was Chop Robinson, I think that, you know, there would be the potential that the pick could have worked out and been a great one, but there also been a potential that it really wasn't. And so I think not having that opportunity, I think that the Ravens, you know, with Wiggins ended up getting in a good position where corners are highly valuable. Guys with that kind of speed at corner and recovery are really valuable. You know, those are passable things that you can feel like you're not getting a really potential low floor.
All right. Then pick 26 comes off the board to Tampa Bay. And it was a good pick, but it was also a missed opportunity to trade up for the Ravens, because it wouldn't have taken a whole lot to move up those four spots at that point. They could have done it for less than their third round pick. So by giving up the third and got a return of something a little bit less, which is what it would have been. But they took Graham Barton, and so we're feeling pretty good about that. Barton is another guy, very versatile offensive line. If you want to build your team around a new center, Graham Barton's your guy. If you want him to play tackle, I don't think he's your guy at all. Could be he's this year's Zach Tom, but I think he's probably ticketed for center with Tampa Bay as the replacement for Jensen. But he stands to be a very solid football player, lead their line for years to come, from all I've heard.
Yeah, I flagged this spot when Verse and Turner were off the board from a draft perspective as a spot. They were, you know, Tampa was really linked to potentially wanting an edge guy, in particular, like a true edge guy. And seeing this as maybe a spot where they would have had a chance to move up. And, you know, especially if you're looking for an interior guy, Powell Johnson being a guy that was still on the board here, and a guy that if you were in the Ravens spot or even back into the second, you know, a guy that's still on the board right now and probably will be through the first handful of picks in the second round, there was a chance where, you know, they could have done what Buffalo did, move back once, move back again, those kind of things. And so a little surprising, even with the Ravens, as much as they like Wiggins, to not be willing to even think about a move up. But, you know, we heard DaCosta during his, I don't know if you saw this, the interview after the draft, he came out and said, someone called us and asked us to trade up. And we said, yeah, we don't really do that in Baltimore.
Okay, that's a teenage male bravado at this point, yeah. Showing up. You know, they did it for Lamar Jackson. Come on.
Yes, exactly. They did it for Joe Flacco, and they've done it for, like, they've definitely done it.
Kyle Moore, yeah.
They did it Michael Orr. There are plenty of instances where we can reference where the Ravens have traded up in the first round.
Yeah. So those are all good examples, though, all the ones you named right there. Okay, I really do hate that. And part of what I hate about it was the fact that the guys that went at 27 and 28 weren't necessarily guys that the Ravens had to have in any way, also at 26. And if you make that trade, first with Arizona, who made their own pick and got a good player, Darius Robinson's a good player, but he's a top of the second round guy, I would think. And I think he was still going to be a guy available at 30. And if Arizona trades the pick to the Ravens, they could have picked up some solid loose change. It would have been Ravens would have given up their three or maybe pick 110 at that point, or 113 at that point would have been the exchange. Would have been a perfectly reasonable payoff for moving down three spots. Perfectly reasonable pay for the Ravens, in my opinion, to get Guyton. They didn't do it. And that left them with two teams. Well, Buffalo, first of all, beginning at about pick 25 or 26, they started to be in competition with the Chiefs for the for a trade-up proposition that would have gotten them Guyton. Then the Chiefs end up trading to 28 and taking Xavier Worthy anyway after trading with Buffalo for him. That to me, I mean, look, I am as much as any team, I'm concerned about the Chiefs after you leave the division. And yet I think the Xavier Worthy pick was an unbelievable reach at that point.
Yeah. The statistics, I mean, obviously Worthy is fast, and you mm-hmm. have, for anybody that has seen certain highlights of him, you're wowed by those highlights. But I think what did I see? First of all, his contested catch numbers are terrible. His desire to be in any situation where there's going to be contact is terrible. But I think that the real kicker was that he only over his college career had four or five catches over 20 yards in the air. So for a guy that is supposed to be a take the top off the offense player, and I might have that exact statistic wrong, but it was certainly less than 10. And I think it was less than six.
Interesting.
For a guy that's got that kind of speed and in the system that he was in, you would expect there to have been, and especially being across from Mitchell, you would have seen more opportunities for him to be the deep guy, to be the take the top off the offense guy and have those kind of conversions. And that just wasn't showing up statistically. That's interesting.
So to back you up entirely, 8.5 yards per target in 2023, he's playing opposite Adonai Mitchell. So that's a very advantaged position, whether you're playing on the slot on the same side, but he's mostly playing the slot on the opposite side from Adonai Mitchell, who's on the X side. He did have 7.6 yak per reception. A lot of that was red yards on screen passes. So anytime you have that showing up, you notice there's a lot. Passer rating throwing to him, 93.6, not exactly off the charts for a draftable receiver. And, you know, he projects to be a slot guy in the NFL. And if the Ravens didn't want him, certainly, but he competes with your Z if your Z is a little bit of a smaller, fast guy. And that's certainly what the Ravens have. And he certainly competes with your slot, where the Ravens have big slots that they call tight ends that they want to put there. So I think there were so many questions about Worthy. Can he beat press coverage? Can he work through contact where he hadn't really had a lot of success in college? Can he even get a clean release off the line of scrimmage? Can he provide any value as a blocker? Can you imagine the Ravens wanting a guy like Xavier Worthy after looking at his blocking tape?
I think they were worried that Buffalo was going to take him. Like it was very much a, you're going to take him instead of, I think that's the only reason you consider this, but I found the statistic. So Worthy had 23 targets of balls thrown 20 or more yards in the air last season, 23 targets. Mm-hmm. He converted those for six catches, 234 yards and two touchdowns.
Yeah, 6 for 234 on the 20 target. Pluses. Yeah, is not good.
Yeah. Six for 23.
Yeah, that's not he's under 10 yards per target on his deep balls. And usually those deep balls, you would expect them to be better yards per target opportunities. But he also his percentage of completing them is low. There are guys who are lower than that, but that's quite low. Yeah, it's not a good profile. You go across the board, it's not like there's some statistics says, oh, that's what makes up for it. So I agree. I mean, just wasn't a lot to like there. And I think he's a player who'll just get out physical in the NFL. I think his value of his speed will be tremendously mitigated.
And super interesting that Marquise Brown and him are going to be on the field together for a decent number of snaps next year. That's fascinating. I mean, maybe the Chiefs are going to find a way to bring verticality back to their offense and back to the offense in the NFL, but it is not just, and look, if you're going to trust anybody to do that, to be effectively able to do that, it's Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. That being said, shorter passes are not a Chiefs thing. It is an NFL thing. Teams have changed the way that they play defense from 5 years ago. When you saw these Chiefs offenses that were, you know, with Hardman, that were really chucking the ball down the field, and with Hill, teams just don't play defense the same way that they did at that time. And we're seeing less effectiveness in some of those plays. It's going to be super interesting to see how guys like Marquise Brown and Worthy end up converting in Kansas City.
It actually, I think, in a way, puts even more pressure on Travis Kelce to be the biggest underneath threat of all. I mean, they're also going to apparently be without Rice for a while. So, we'll see how that works out for them. I'm sure the Chiefs probably will find a way to get value out of Worthy more than we would think. But there's a lot of fast guys, and not all of them end up being good receivers. So we'll see. Let's keep moving here because we got to finish this up. But Tyler Guyton, drafted number 29 by the Cowboys. And again, the Cowboys were looking to get a left tackle, or at least it was a lot of the thought. Guyton is a guy who has experience at left tackle. I thought he'd be at the perfect intersection of need and value at number 30 for the Ravens. And I'm not 100% sure the Ravens wouldn't have taken him at 30, but there might be some evidence that they wouldn't have with Wiggins and him on the board. If, say, Dallas takes somebody else like Ricky Pearsall or Xavier Leggett or somebody like that, would the Ravens have still taken Wiggins over Guyton? And I think you're dealing then with two things. You have a tremendously undervalued player in Wiggins who you probably think you're getting very cheap at that point. And we've already talked about that, so we don't need to really repeat it. And then you have another guy in Tyler Guyton who meets your needs, probably is right on par with value. So you're not getting a gain there, but you're also relieving yourself of an important 2025 consideration, which is how do I find my next left tackle, which is now completely unapparent to me how they're going to fill that spot. It could happen. They could do it a number of ways. They could have a crappy year this year and win 5 games, and all of a sudden they're in the mix for top left tackle talent. Or they could make the playoffs this year, which is, I think, what will happen. They will be drafting no better than about number 20, 22, something like that. And they won't have good opportunities to take a left tackle in the next draft, which will further make this extreme. This is the draft. They needed a developmental left tackle, and missing out on Guyton is a big bummer, even with the huge consolation prize of getting Nate Wiggins.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible to disagree with that. Guyton would have been, if he was the guy the Ravens wanted, it seemed like Dallas was not going to be an opportunity to trade up. So by the time it got to Kansas City trading into Buffalo's spot, it was a completely missed opportunity. I agree with all you're saying about the offensive line. It's certainly a concern for the Ravens in the long term. It will be a huge area of whether it ends up being free agency or other drafts or whatever. That's where we're going to be with that. But I think the Ravens really like Nate Wiggins. The way that they talked about him in the press, and not that they don't, you know, teams don't talk highly about their players in press conferences, and you can overblow and overstate some of these kind of things. But I don't think that the Ravens thought that there was any universe of which Wiggins was seriously going to be on the board at 30. The Ravens love They love to take guys that fall in the draft like this that are 5, 10, 7, 12 picks behind where they should be in the draft. They love taking like guys like that, turning them into stars and rubbing the rest of the league's face in it. I think that the Ravens were very happy to get Wiggins. I think they know that they've got a decision coming up with Brandon Stevens. What kind of year he has, if he's not willing to sign an extension now, what kind of year is he going to have next year? If it's great, they're going to have a huge hole at corner at that point. What are we going to get from Humphrey? Is his health going to reestablish or not? I think there's a big chance that even if the Ravens plugged the solution long-term at left tackle this year at offensive line, the corner was going to be the next big problem that the Ravens had to fill.
Oh, for sure. I mean, for sure that's true. You're much more able to solve a cornerback problem in round 3 or round 4, as they did with Stevens, for example, than you are. Now, they missed on some corners. They missed on JAD. They missed on Pepe in terms of round 4 guys. But they got Stevens, despite my incredible protestations at the time. Wiggins, it's very hard for me to argue with the value. I love the guy, my number one corner again, like I say, in this draft. So I'm happy they got him in that sense. It's a great consolation prize. Just the barriers to entry are like closing in around me in this way that I fear. I really fear it's going to be an enormous problem for the Ravens at tackle. We've seen what teams like Cincinnati have been through in terms of just having crap out there at left tackle. Can Lamar Jackson help that? Sure. Lamar Jackson can help that situation some. Can Ronnie Stanley come back and have a big year? Sure, he can. Could Fa'alele step up and have two good years for the Ravens now at right tackle? It's possible. You know, we're like rolling on trying to get Fa'alele to work out. We're rolling for a hard 10. Okay. That's in relative. Let me put this in craps term because I know we both understand that. Hoping that Ronnie Stanley works out for this next year is probably only like trying to hit the 8 against the 7. You know, just a straight up, not non-specific 8. So I like those. You know, I like the Stanley risk a lot better. And then hoping that Lamar can mitigate all that. I think that's kind of a fool's possibility. I think if everything falls apart about the offensive line and the way it could, then Lamar is going to have a very hard time making up for that.
I think, you know, the one interesting name that I think we heard early in free agency connected to the Ravens that I think might end up landing with the team eventually is going to be Becton from the Jets, who is a guy that they couldn't, I mean, played okay, wasn't great, but obviously good pedigree. And the Ravens think that there's something there. Then it's kind of a bit of a, we'll call it a jack in the hole. We won't call it an ace in the hole.
Yeah, it's like a 7 in the hole.
I'm willing to be a little bit more optimistic about it than that. But we heard some early rumors that they had a pretty low-level contract with him. That kind of tackled up could end up making a really big difference with the team.
Okay. And obviously Josh Jones is still around and could settle in somewhere and play effectively. It almost looks like the Ravens have him ticketed for a guard competition, but he's played enough tackle and badly enough that Arizona got rid of him, by the way. But he could find a home under good coaching in Baltimore, suddenly become a decent right tackle. I guess you could even see a world where he could be a decent left tackle for the Ravens. It's kind of hard for me to see that, but we can always hope. So we'll just finish off the first round here. Ricky Pearsall, drafted by the 49ers. Didn't quite have him in the first round. In fact, he wasn't in my top 10. Xavier Leggett was a guy I absolutely loved, but I loved him at 62, not at 32. I think, you know, we've seen him rise up on draft boards these last couple of weeks in a astonishing way in terms of how valuable he is. But he is the yak master. In terms of a guy you want to get the football to, let him run his face. He is A.J. Brown. That's the kind of receiver the Panthers are getting. They traded back into that spot to get him, and they, I think, got really good value.
Yeah.
All right.
It was. I was surprised by these two picks here at the end of the draft, but it was also the Niners that got Pearsall, and it was the Panthers who got Leggett.
I think that's what I said, didn't I?
Okay. Oh, okay. I must have heard it backwards. I think
I heard it. I might have said it backwards. That's always a possibility. We're recording this at 1:08 a.m., so anything is possible. But anyway, you are correct on that that pairing exactly. So, Jordan, I always appreciate doing this with you. I'm really looking forward to doing the draft stream with you again tomorrow night. You're going to be there for a portion of the night, right, with us? So,
yep, I'm going to try and come on for the start of the second round.
Great, sounds great. We'll certainly appreciate having you there. And we had a great night tonight. We had a lot of fun with that draft. We had a record number of viewers for the people who came in on the stream. I don't know how those counts might be different, but really excellent audience participation. So the people who were there were asking tons of questions. We couldn't even keep up with them. There's a stream of questions coming down because there's a lot of people. Really appreciated that and had a lot of fun doing it. But why don't you tell people where they can talk football with you and find anything that you read or do?
Yeah, at Raven Sit Room on Twitter. You can find me there. And I did the Situation Room podcast with Gabe. We're trying to figure out what this upcoming season is going to be like, but we're big avid Ravens fans. He's at Gabe Fergie. I'm at Raven Sit Room. We'd love to hear from you guys, and we'd love talking football over there.
Yeah, Gabe will be on Saturday for that 6-pick bonanza for the Ravens, and that will be a lot of fun too. So I won't try and plug anything specifically other than to say please watch the draft show the next 2 days. We will have tons of content for you, tons of analysis. We had a great fun time of it, I think, tonight in terms of going through this, and I hope people really enjoyed it, and we'll come back again. Jordan, thanks again for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.